We will literally take the most mean tweet you can think of and use it to have a conversation. And when you can take one tweet and turn it into 4,000 followers and have engagements in the 20,000 figures, this is when you start to have government agencies open their eyes, like, oh, we're starting to get it. Now we see. So think about, you know, the grassroots campaign and how you slowly build your followers and how you get them to go maybe knock on doors. That's what we're doing, but we're doing it from our phones and from an iPad or from my desk on Sunday at my lunch hour. And that's what's so great about social media is you can just fit it in wherever you have time. Whereas I can't fit in a town hall meeting whenever I have time. It takes a lot of time to plan that.
This is Alicia Trost, communications department manager and the powerhouse behind one of the Bay Area's most active Twitter handles, SF BART. BART, or the Bay Area Rapid Transit, if you spell it out, is our version of the New York subway system. And I am so excited for these next episodes because honestly, as nerdy as I know this sounds, I love BART. I use BART daily, and no matter the great, the good, the bad, or the ugly, I still love it. I mean, first of all, trains are just really cool. Between my work on this case study as well as the Amtrak one we published earlier this year, I've had a few chances to stand in awe in front of giant locomotives and electric-powered cars, see the inner workings of their track system, ride brand new shiny trains. I mean, the whole operation is just so interesting. Second, BART has had a significant impact on my quality of life. I don't think it's any surprise to any of our listeners that the Bay Area has awful traffic. It's probably the second thing people point out to me when I mention, oh, I'm based out of our San Francisco office, you know, after they comment on our crazy housing market. Our traffic is intense, and it would be so difficult for me just to even get to work without BART. Or I just finished up a graduate program that put me in lecture two nights a week out in the East Bay. There is no way I could have made work plus a school schedule happen without BART. And last but certainly not least, one of my best friends of over 20 years lives even further out in the East Bay, and BART makes it easy for me to go visit her and her girls, for her to bring them into the city and visit me at the Salesforce Tower, for example. For us to keep that friendship strong, even as our lives take our day-to-day in different directions. BART is very personal to me, and lately it seems I'm not the only one. The Bay Area is facing some really big social and economic challenges right now, which are pushing themselves into the BART system in a very visible way. And as more people raise concerns about health and human service needs that result from this, needs that BART, again, a transit agency, isn't necessarily structured to address, the conversation has taken on an especially passionate and emotional tone as of late, which is why I, again, a self-declared BART fangirl, gained an even deeper, newfound respect for the organization. I got to spend the past few months working closely with the team, peeling back the onion to understand what things they are addressing, what they're doing about the things they can't, and how that all comes through in their communication strategy. And before we dive into it, here's a little bit of background, some of the things I really want you to listen for in this interview. BART built an engagement platform on Salesforce's Social Studio and Service Cloud. They use this platform to monitor conversations over Twitter, Facebook, etc., and respond in a real-time manner, streamline things like maintenance tickets if a tweet is related to a broken kiosk or something, and gain insights about how the Bay Area experiences BART. And while the platform is pretty cool, what brings it all to life really is the strategy that they've then wrapped around it. The team has a communications approach that is totally impressive, something that is a precise example of what Peter Schwartz was talking about in the last episode, where he described how emerging technology is going to transform and dictate how organizations will reach their customers. So with that, in the first segment of today's episode, Alicia will share the things her and her team take into consideration when they're thinking about who their customers are, how those customers engage with the transit system, and what it all means in terms of outreach options. Then in the second segment, she'll talk about the content strategy itself, that is not just about how you engage your constituents, but also what you engage them with if you're really going to be successful in building a communicative, responsive government organization, something that's especially important if you're being called upon in some of those tough conversations. And finally, in the next episode, yes, there is a part two because I could not part with so much of our conversation. We'll look at the big picture impact that's come from this approach, including the numbers the team has seen, the quite literal payoff that's come from strengthening community advocacy, and the role this work plays in helping combat some of those very real and very raw issues.
Our Digital Nation is brought to you by the FedRAMP-approved Salesforce Government Cloud. Give leadership, management, and employees the mobile, self-service, analytical tools they need to connect data, process, and people. Create a digital platform that puts the customer at the heart of the mission.
Let's talk about your customers a little bit. Your customers are your writers, of course, but your customers expand broader than just that, don't
right.
they? Right,
yeah, because if you live in the Bay Area, if you own a home, you are paying property taxes in okay. DeBart. So those are our customers. We need to make sure we're talking to them just as much as our writers. Maybe not just as much as our writers, but it's really important we talk to our writers more. But we can't forget, and all government can't forget, that we have to articulate our value to so many more people than just the people that ride our trains every day. We have to make sure our lawmakers understand our value, that the people that own property and are paying into us, those that are sales tax revenue that's mm-hmm. coming into us, people that go over the bridge, part of that toll money is identified for certain BART projects. And so it's really important we're talking to the entire region and that they know the role we play.
And you guys don't always get to stop your customers and talk to them. You know, if you think about a retail environment or even other government services like the VA or something where you have folks coming into a hospital, you have folks coming into a clinic, you guys don't get to stop your primary customers and talk to them all the time.
Yeah. When you think about it, you are always going somewhere. You would not be at BART if you weren't going somewhere. And for the most part, you want to go somewhere quickly. You're usually sort of rushing. You really need to get to that appointment or you don't want to miss the first pitch of the game. And so it's hard to talk to our customers. We get out there, we get into the station to do outreach. Of course we do that. And we try to intercept them and talk and have them take a quick survey or at least tell us their thoughts. And that works. But we also miss a lot of people. They don't want to talk to us. We can't even get their attention, right? They've got their face buried in their phone, even when walking, which isn't safe. They've got headphones on. Maybe they're attending to their child to make sure that they're safe in the system. And so it's hard to talk to our customers. Not only that, people don't understand. We also don't always know where they're going. We have a regional transit card in the Bay Area, and they have all that data. So we also don't know you as a user and where you get on and where you get off, because we don't control that information, which is why it's so important that we can talk to people on social media when they're ready to talk to us and about what they want to talk to us about. And that's how we sort of get to know them as a writer. We have that history of the interaction and we kind of learn about them that way. Like, oh, they complained about the parking at this specific lot, or they complained about an escalator at this specific station. That's how we actually get to know them a little bit more than what average agencies or companies that have a lot of data about their clients or who their customers. Mm-hmm. We don't have that luxury. So we really have to get creative when trying to learn about who our writers are.
And all of a sudden you have, through your action, said, we are listening mm-hmm. and we understand. That really helps people to know that they're being heard, that they exist. It's that right. classic action speak louder than words.
Right. That's what's so great about social media is that before, if you emailed into customer services, you might not have had that back and forth that social media is so ripe for, that engaging where you'll send a tweet and they tweet right back at you and you just keep going on until that question is answered. So what I say is, well, you have to make yourself be part of those conversations. You need to go find what people are talking about and how you relate to it. And then basically jump right on in and start providing comments. That's the whole point of social media. It's not to post the latest picture of something, actually. It's evolved from that. And there's other platforms that actually do that much better when it comes to a pretty picture. And so when you're using Twitter or Facebook, you should be using it really for 100% sole purpose of engaging. And engaging people that may not be your customer or writer right now, but maybe they will be once you start talking to them and educating them. Or even if they don't want to be your customer writer, maybe there'll be someone who then affiliates with you or appreciates your brand or will support you or will jump in and support you when somebody is saying something incorrect or saying that we're doing something wrong. And that's why engagement is so key. And especially for government, it truly shows people why we're important. yes, we can put out a bunch of great messages and a bunch of great pre-packaged storytelling, amazing content, but not everyone's looking at that. And usually only a certain type of person is even welcome to looking at that. Whereas if you take a really angry customer that we did them wrong somehow and really talk to them about it, or even someone just has a legitimate question, like, I don't understand why I can't use my credit card at this machine. Why? We workshop those key messages. And then what happened is we started to use them ever so slightly in the tone of our social media posts and responding to people. And it just got picked up and people started to get it. They understood that they were making that connection. I love using the data behind what we're getting from Social Studio and like what topics people are talking about to create our content off of that. You know, okay. If I see parking is trending one day over the next, 1 month over the next, all of a sudden people are just talking a lot about parking. And when I say talking, usually it's complaining or asking questions that we need to create more content about our parking policies. What are we doing to change them? What are we doing to help address those concerns or escalators or crime? It's these hot topics. And we see them ebb and flow. It's so interesting each week to go in and look at how the post labels are trending that we've set up. And then it's good to tell the bosses too, like, look, we have fewer complaints about homeless people on our system. We have fewer complaints about biohazards this week. What did we do different? Did we staff up this week? Or if all of a sudden there's a huge spike, what's going on? You know, so I love being able to take that data and then create content around it, or at least try to understand it better.
So you're taking what I would call qualitative points, you know, qualitative conversations, and turning that into quantitative data points to be able to make decisions on.
Right. And not just decisions at the executive level of where do we need to staff up, where do we need to put more resources to, but also storytelling content, or what should we be talking about in the media? Because really, we're getting those ideas straight from the public instead of what we think we should be talking about. And we do that too, but it's truly customer-driven content. Which, I mean, that's what people want, right? And then they're so excited to get a response. I cannot tell you. I'm still shocked at how excited people get when you reply with an honest answer instead of just either saying, oh, we're going to pass this on to a team member, or, oh, that information can be found on this page of our website, but actually explain to them, give them some context, explain to them like what we're doing to work on it. They're so excited to get a response. It's really rewarding on our end.
You certainly notice it as a BART writer myself. Anytime, like I notice when you guys put up the brand new signs, the big electric signs that have big bold lettering. I notice when you guys do replace light bulbs.
Yeah. You'll start paying attention more because you heard from us maybe that we were working on it. And then all of a sudden you're actually going to start, oh yeah, BART did say that they were working on that. And part of that though is making sure we have all the right information. And that's really hard to do. We build this amazing knowledge base of if somebody just complains, Embarcadero is so dark, what are you doing about it? We have to be able to quickly say, we've got this lighting project, we're doing this, we're doing that. And let's take them behind the scenes with some pictures and video and social media, and then using those great posts to then engage. People see the frontline workers, but they don't get sort of a behind the scenes curtain of what's going on in planning, what's going on with the team that's tasked with replacing all of the escalators, or the team that is trying to make the stations have better lighting. That's not something that they see or learn about. Their first comments are usually questions. And then if you're ignoring those questions, you're just failing your writers. Why would you ignore a really great question? If we weren't actually giving them specific answers with maybe data or timeline, something, an actual real answer, then this wouldn't work. If it was, you know, we agree, we hear you, we understand your concern that that station is dark and we're working on it. That's not enough. You need to say, we are awarding a contract in the next 3 months to do this, this, and that. Here's the timeline and here's where you can learn more about it, maybe. That is how you do it right. It's that level of information. The writers and the customers expect. I keep saying, you can't just be friendly anymore, which is sad. Before, customer service was like, well, you just have to be really friendly.
The smile voice over
but
the phone.
But you actually have to have a real answer and try to be friendly also.
Yeah. Well, and that's what gets people listening and paying attention. everybody kind of likes to be on the inside. It's interesting. Yeah. I don't know if you remember a few years ago, it was a little bit hard to kind of get your voice heard on Twitter. There's a lot of articles being posted around the time about Twitter changing the algorithm so that you got more closely aligned with those services, that you were engaging with those people you were engaging with each and every day. Now, I know today we have a few folks that are very active, very loud voices on social media, mm-hmm. especially on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But what I love so much about your guys' story is that you have kind of figured out how to solve that shouting into the void, how to solve that shouting into a black hole. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's because we're using it to actually have a real authentic conversation. And it's truly as simple as that. It's finding the perfect question and you have the perfect answer and then replying and then making sure some of those things are actually shared. And maybe that's quote tweeting a thread to then share it with everyone else. Sometimes it's creating a Twitter moment, if that's what you need to do, mm-hmm. to then archive that whole back and forth. But what we know now is the media is so constrained and strapped for stories and content that social media is where they're going for stories. And so a very simple back and forth with someone can all of a sudden get the eyes of someone in the media. And then all of a sudden you've got an earned media just for responding to someone. And this is happening to us several times a month, that basically an interaction we're having with someone about a topic that a lot of people are talking about on social media somehow makes the headlines, which I'm still sort of scratching my head about it. Because a lot of times these are topics that have been talked about for a long time. They're not press release worthy, but the media is picking up on it. And they're like, oh, but today Bart explains why people shouldn't actually stand on the right and walk on the left on the escalator. God forbid I say that. But actually, there's studies that actually show that it can cause escalators to break when you do that. And
really?
we had that conversation once on social media, and we got so much earned media out of it because it was such an interesting concept that they were laughing that we were taking it on. And then it's so fun to see other people jump in and say, yeah, I heard about this. There was a study in the London Tube and they did this and here was the data. And you just never know the conversations that can start. And I understand it's really scary to just jump in and start replying to people when you're a government agency. And that's why we always keep saying you really have to workshop who you are and what your tone should be and what it shouldn't be. And then once you have that, it actually starts getting really easy because you realize you do that gut check. Is this what I want to be saying? Is this the right way to say it? Once you start doing it. And we're just always encouraging other government agencies to not just use social media as that bullhorn, but to really use it as a chat room, get in there, start having conversations, even the most difficult ones. You're okay with having those conversations in a town hall meeting. Why wouldn't you just have it in social media space? And sometimes it takes a little bit at first. Somebody can mean tweet at us and we have a response and the next couple tweets may still be, yes, but you failed at this and I don't like you because of this, but don't give up. You just keep at it. And then what happens is they slowly start to say, well, I understand now. And then it's a thank you for engaging. You know, they actually thank us for taking the moment to explain it to them.
Alicia opens up about some of those difficult conversations in a little more detail, including the opioid crisis, the Bay Area's homeless crisis, and more, as well as the role her team plays and the role it has come to play in not just answering questions, but also actively addressing some of these very tense moments. All of that when we come back in the next episode, part two of Have You Ever Tweeted at SF BART?
Five-car San Francisco Daily City Train, all ordered.